there are certain areas in which to start, and one of them is called the Wallaka, and the Wallaka is simply a story, and the short story in about 2 minutes is about who I am, and though I am Little Crow, I was someone else before that, by the name of Carl Bryant, and Carl died in 1990-91, somewhere in there, and that opened the door for Little Crow, which is a kind of a family name carried by my grandfather, my father, and my great-grandfather, all having other names, and my other name, my real name is Teyat Teduda, which means His Red Nation. I died in 1863 on July 3rd and was reborn and re-entered into this environment July 8th, 1933. Now that doesn't seem like a very significant date, but as we proceed here the rest of this time that I have with you, and as we watch the video that I'm going to share with you here, it will make some sense to you. At least it makes sense to me, and I've always been of the mind that faith is kind of a strange thing, even if no one else in the entire universe agrees with you. Faith is what you are about as an individual, and that in itself is enough. You don't really need the concurrence or validation of another human being of any sort. But that if you do truly believe that and live in that way, then it is of great benefit to the universe and to all things to which we are connected. Born in Pine Ridge, South Dakota, and was raised by a woman from the Rosebud, grew up in the environment of the Midwest, Omaha, Nebraska, and from there entered into military service, government service, and kind of wandered the world and wound up out here in California, and came under the tutelage and advice of five elders, and when I was age 39, after a lot of self-destructive attitude and behavior, hatred, self-hatred of myself mainly, which I perpetrated upon people of different status and color, working for the federal government at that time and in the areas of drug enforcement. So it became kind of an interesting transition going back into my culture at age 39, re-having to establish myself and to do all the things which were required of me to do, and continue to do that on a day-to-day basis now, from 39 to 63, and still working at it every day, learning to be who I am, to be who I am and what I am. And so that's the story. I am an Iska, I'm an interpreter of my oral tradition. And as in all interpretations hinge on perspective. And perspectives are individual. Each of us in this room have a perspective, and so we have maybe 80 perspectives in here that hears one thing, and we have 80 different interpretations of what we hear. And so as we can realize that and apply that to the universe and to those things which have been our history over the many ages, it begins to make sense as to why there has not been an agreement or coming to a consensus, just because of that issue itself, that each of us bears our own perspective, and even though we enjoin ourselves in a common cause, it is very difficult for us at times to reach consensus without a feeling of being slighted, or our opinions are meaningless, or have no power, or have no authority. And so it's very difficult to have a group of any kind, or a community of any kind, that can operate with the idea that community is indeed what we are, and that we are accountable and connected and related, and in that relatedness we are responsible for those with whom we exist, and that includes the planet. So it was with that in keeping that I say to you today, I do not speak for Native people or Indigenous people, I speak for Little Crow. These words are mine. They are my perspectives about what you will see, what we'll share with you today. And in doing that, I would hope that you are mindful of that as you listen to me, as we talk about these things which I've brought here, as I say, to share with you. That in itself is kind of the crutch of it. It is always an honor and a pleasure to come up this way and to be with my dear friends, EJ and Doris and the commander, and to be in this area. It's a beautiful area here. And as some of you know, and you've heard of me and read of me, and others of you I don't, and I would look forward to shaking your hands and meeting you today. Handshakes are $7.50. Pictures with the king are $25. Yeah, a long time ago I figured if Sitting Bull could do that, then I could too. You know, he used to charge for his photos and also a Black Elk. So we, you know, that's how it goes. So we. But it's been an interesting adventure for me, and as I say, it is something that I wish to share. We have a gathering down in Orange County, and it's called the American Indian Unity Church, and we refer to it as a gathering, and it is trademarked. And for those who are from Colorado, we do not have a satellite in Colorado, although I recognize that in Boulder, someone is calling themselves the American Indian Unity Church, and they will be hearing from my attorneys. You got to protect that stuff for now. You see, educated Indian, that makes it really kind of tough sometimes when you get educated Indian. What we're going to be looking at today is a video by my cousin, Dr. Chuck Ross. He walks among them. His videos on American Indian prophecies, there's two that he did. He did number one and he did number two, and number three is coming out. There'll be information on our table as to how to order those videos if you're interested in them, and to watch and to listen further in things that you may miss today. Because like so many things, if you hear it one time, you will hear only certain things. And again, if you hear it a second time and vice versa, you will pick up something else. And it goes that way with the redundancy sometimes in homilies or preaching or whatever people want to call it is that we do, is the redundancy of our message. But the message has to be done in a redundancy, because each time you hear it, you do hear something new and your perspective changes. And so therefore, the energy that you put out is becoming more and more effective each time that you think about it. So what we will be watching today is some research that Chuck has done over the past 20 years. Our pathways have, he is my cousin by blood, which we didn't know. And in different parts of the world, we started on our journeys at about the same time. That was another synchronicity in our relationship. I went to hear him some years back at a conference in Los Angeles and introduced myself to him. And as we sat and shared stories, we found out that we had walked similar paths. The differences being slight and yet significant, both serving in the military, both coming through alcohol and drug addiction and abuse. He, of course, going to Indian Mission School and becoming a churchgoer, and myself going through life looking for somewhere to be, looking for somewhere to be accepted, coming to realization that what we had, our culture, was significant and in parity with other cultures and should be looked at and studied and if you could use that word, understood, but more so accepted by us as individuals, and therefore take our rightful place and do whatever it is we're supposed to do. So that's kind of how it's been. We paralleled. We realized early on that validity, certification, and license were necessary in order to be taken seriously. Chuck had this information long before he went to school, and he began to gather it, but it wasn't until he got his PhD that he began to be taken seriously. People say, oh, what a nice, quaint little story the Indian man is telling. But after he got his PhD, he said, isn't that wonderful? Yes, indeed. That's a true fact. That's the real stuff. That's the real McCoy, because Dr. Ross said so. You know, and so we both realized that. And one of the things that was touted for a long time by friends who gathered with me was that I had the validity and I had the certification. I had the education. And mainly I had the articulation that I could take this issue and present it in an articulate fashion in the language of the realm, the language of the realm being English. And I remember a long time ago my mother and father telling me as I was a young person is to learn the language, and once you learn the language you can get and attain anything that you wish to, because you must know how to manipulate the language, and if you can manipulate it in a good way, you can be persuasive and you can attain what it is that you need. Because you live in a civilization that are built on words. Words. And words build perspectives, and perspectives create actions, and actions create results. And so if you can do all of that, then you become an attorney. we've had our problems with attorneys, haven't we? Yeah, so I dropped out of law school early on at the third year and said, no, I didn't think I wanted to do that, and I went on and did other things, but there you go. It's been a variant and exciting experience. I have with you, and I guess maybe I need to know how it is we should proceed with this, because I do want to present the second in the prophecy tapes, number two, and show it to you, let you watch that and listen to it, because you are linear, most of you, and you do work in a linear perspective. Your mind works in a linear fashion. Watching and viewing and seeing and listening work very well together, and that's all very much of our traditional aspect, is talking and listening and watching and observing and saving the questions for maybe 5 or 6 years down the road. By that time you've thought about it enough, you've answered all your questions, so you don't have any, and you just dutifully sit there, smile and nod. You know, yeah, that's the truth. So we work in that concept, so I'd like to know what it is you'd like to do first before your butts become too tired on those seats and you need to get up and stretch. If you'd like to watch this tape first, and then we can enter into discussion over it and kind of go from there. Well, okay. I see the stick just disappeared. Commander?
We'll watch the tape.
Well, I got the word.
I'm going to let her go so that she can enjoy it. It's been a long, hard go for 10 years. Hard training. And this is the big foot to her rear. Every time she calls to ask for sympathy, he kicks her in the rear and says, get on with our work. And it's worked. We have. And he has. And it's a bond. It's a bond with every one of you. Perhaps you know blood is a physical thing. Spiritual connections are of God. And our ladies and I want to thank them, because this has been a mammoth task. Because nobody has been able to stop any of their workload to prepare so that people would not have to go out to lunch, and we could cut it short, let you meet Little Crow, get acquainted a little bit. He needs to get out of here around 4 o'clock, and I know that it was promised that that would be announced. He's on his own now. It's been announced. He is also, he knows, with his friends, welcome to stay. There will always be a place in our teepee. Always. Our hogan. Mi caso su casa. And Dorma says, speak for yourself. Why don't we watch the tape, and then you can decide when you want to have your lunch break. And then we're going to let him have the afternoon. And I'll give it back to you. I'll put it there on the table. Anybody have anything they want to say? Yeah. Salut, ladies and gentlemen. All right. I'm going to enjoy the show.
Salut.
A dimensional barrier of some kind that you're different. And you could have listened closely to what Dr. Ross had to say. And you would have heard this message all the way through it. The difference is a matter of frequency and particulate. If I put my particulate in your frequency, you're going to get arrested and sent to prison. It's that simple. And you have plenty of observers here this very day, just waiting for that old guy upstairs to blunder just a little bit. And it's hard not to when you have your family gathered. But I'm not going to. And we'll see how the rest of the time works out. I want to start back again while everybody gets settled. And we don't mind chewing if you do it quietly. But Little Crow does have a heavy, heavy load. And, yeah, he's one of these sacred people. Well, I'd like to meet one who's not. And all of you are sacred. Everything on this place and in the universe is sacred. There is a truth for every individual. And when one's tried to sort out these truths, you find that this one is a lie, that one is a lie. This is the part of a growing child. How is a child going to learn if it doesn't reach out and miss? And then it misses, and then it misses, and then it finally is able to pick up something with its little hands. And then forevermore, parents are no, 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 no. But that's the way learning comes. And a lot of us are tired because a lot of us have been around a long, long, long string of times. When he showed you the circle, as we move into the duality of life itself, it's easiest to explain that in the male-female relationship simply because it has a connotation, something you can relate to. And the world is made up of electricity, charged particles. And there is no future, no past. You're in it. Only perceptions change. And if there is any actual motion at all, it is simply up and down. But you experience it, as Little Crow said, linearly. We call it sequence of events. And I'll get my turn tomorrow for everybody who wants to stay, and I have already laid down my request to please not let her talk all night. Put tape over her mouth, whatever is required. I'm going to need her voice. But I'm sorry Little Crow has to go because we have some other remarkable people in this room. Teddy is here. He has come a long way. He has traveled a long way. And he knows me. So don't ever underestimate what you may find in the chair next to you. And I'm sure that he would share some of his experiences and truth with us tomorrow. And then we'll go day by day by day till you eat every bit of this food. And about Thursday, you know, after she brings all those cakes and things tomorrow, you're going to wish you'd eaten it today. But bless you, I thank you. I truly thank you. And now here's your stick. Would you rather have this pinch-on microphone?
Oh. Modern tech? No.
All right.
You may want to say something else. Well, I'm going to take the stick and move over here. Thank you. I'm accustomed as I am to standing up.
I have very long arms. It's okay.
I realize that, too. It's good to be back with you after that break, and I want to thank everyone who brought and provided food for us and the nourishment, and to remember that food and that it sacrificed for us and gave of itself that you could have that nourishment and mind and body and our spirit. And I want to pay respect to the first people of California on whose land we stand up here, that we not forget them, because it's very important that the first people in California always be remembered. We are visitors in their land, whether we have a mortgage, a title deed, or whatever the hell it is that we think makes sense. It is still their land, and their spirits are here. They're endowed in the trees and the rocks and the mountains and valleys that we pass and drive through and drive over, and they will constantly be with us, as the first people of California are still here too. They have not diminished, but are growing And in that growth, they're taking a lot of advice that Chuck spoke of in buying property and building, building, building. And it's all built upon the idea that people have money and want to somehow find a way to get rid of it. So they've built and launched into the casino operation. And as you know, that's becoming very, very, very successful in California, allowing the tribes to become self-sufficient and self-determinant and creating jobs and money flow in the surrounding communities and putting people to work and taking them off of the welfare and taking them off the dole and the social assistances. And for the first time, bringing about a sense of dignity to many of the Indian nations around the country. So I want you to remember that when we talk. Now, we saw a great tape with Dr. Ross. And I'll ask in the beginning here, are there any questions as to any particular part of it? Because my job now starts to explain to you my perspective about what Chuck had to say. So I'll entertain questions from anyone in the audience. Yes. Please speak up.
Unlike our present accounting in the world, it seems like, according to the Lakota Sioux tradition, it's better to be in the red than the black.
Yeah, that's a pretty good analogy. Being that the red road, of course, is as difficult as the black road, and that whole idea of sometimes leaves me betwixt and between. Because it's a very natural part of our existence. It's a part of our coexistence, and it needs to be. There needs to be a road of materialism, and it needs to be experienced by all of us. And at particular times in our many, many lifetimes, we have experienced a road of materialism and collectivism and all of that ism stuff. And now, if you find yourself in a spiritual endeavor and upon a red path or the red road, whatever, however you wanted to associate with it, it's just part of your experience. And all of those experiences come together and lump together at a particular time where you realize there's a sense of compassion within you as a human being. And that no matter who comes to your doorstep and whatever their life experience has been, you're able to relate to it through compassion because you have experienced the same thing. You know what it is to be materialistic, to be selfish, to be greedy, to be good, to be good, loving, to be generous, to be kind. We know those things because we have experienced them lifetime after lifetime. So the red road and the black road walk together truly. They're parallel. They're parallel roads, regardless of what direction they face. Yeah, very good. Thank you. Another question from someone. David.
Could you possibly explain, there are many things that are signified by the sacred hoop, the four directions and everything. Does that have a connection, I vaguely seem to remember, of Stargate also? Is that how you got here from Pleiades originally?
Well, Stargate was a nice movie. If you realize that in coming here for whatever our purposes were, and he somewhat explained them there, giving up the luxury of being a full-blown spirit, and the luxury of what we would call the gods from outer space, so to speak, and that the fact that we came here through that time, if you want to call it a time gate or a warp or whatever you wish to call it, and crossing through and coming back into this particular part of the universe. The significance is always symbolic. It's symbolic to remember who and what you are and where you came from and what you are about. And we can see that kind of representation in just about everything that we look at. So it was a mindset that came here, not a physical being, so to speak. We did not get into the flesh and the blood simply to be part of or to be considered normal or natural in this environment. But what we brought with us was a mindset. A mindset that was not only prevalent in the Pleiades, but it was also prevalent and is prevalent today throughout the universe itself. And the only place it has a hard time to survive and keeps getting shit thrown on it is here on the planet Earth. That's it. And sometimes my language may sound a little stringent, and that isn't to insult you. It is just the way I express myself. That's part of myself, and that's how I am. And I don't mean to insult anyone at any time.
Well, I'd like to say that that we're grossly offended.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
He doesn't really. you know.
Thank you very much.
The reason that he can say that is because he's from the head of the buffalo, which is Pleiades, and not Sirius, which is the other end of it.
I've been there, though.
haven't we all?
Yeah, I've been there. I certainly realize that aspect.
That's really serious.
Aspect, I get it.
Saw another hand. Yeah.
Would someone like to bring up another question?
Right here. Thank you.
In passing, in the past, Commander has mentioned briefly about the first, second, and third migrations, but I really don't think you did a good job of it. I'm wondering if you could...
Listen to me! I get no respect either.
I'm wondering if you could elaborate on it.
Little Crow, could you repeat the question, by the way, for the tape?
Okay, repeating the question, if I can... You have to speak a little loud for me. My age is working on me.
If you could just elaborate on the definition of first, second, third migrations.
Well, the way I elaborate, if I'm in the same ballpark with you, is talking about the civilizations. And civilizations, to me, are always marked by movement, and movement such as the directions in the air and things, but also of people, ideas and mindset. Again, this place here that we live in now, this place called North America, part of that fourth migration, part of the fourth migration that we find ourselves in, the fourth civilization that we find ourselves in, ready to migrate one more time, ready to move into a fifth civilization, if you would. Migration is kind of a natural law. It's a natural law. Our eyes migrate, our hearts migrate, our words migrate, our economies migrate, our homes migrate. We move. We're in constant movement. We're in constant search. We're in constant flow, if you will, with all of the things of nature. Yet we seem to be stationary. We seem to look for roots. We seem to look for a way in which to plant ourselves to feel secure. That is part of our human aspect, because the human aspect requires that we have a sense of stabilization to us. But where it be known, we are not that stable. As nothing else is that stable, everything is in movement. Why should we be the only ones to have a foundation that is so stable that there is no flux or movement to it? The migration. Everybody has a migration story. Everybody, our things talk about us moving from the East Coast and up to the northern part of what is now upper New York and across Mass and Wisconsin and the lakes, and then moving out and moving around, moving around, moving around. That is all part of the natural phenomena of our being as we are here. We move looking for that place that we feel we have been told to go to. Again, it's not without direction. It isn't an ambling, and it isn't an uncontrolled or an unthought about or an unprocessed migration or wandering, you know, as people say, these Indian people wandered around. We didn't wander around. We went with purpose. There was specific purpose to follow instruction. And that instruction comes right out of the sky, comes right out of the heaven. And knowing that system, knowing the solar star system and knowing our star knowledge is a requirement. And in that requirement, it tells us where we have to be at what time and what we need to do. And if we do this, this is the result. And so you can see that over the period of time that civilized nations have come to exist, and that we have come in contact with civilization, so to speak, at many different levels, we have constantly tried to explain to you the necessity of us being able to migrate and to go and to come to these specific places on this place, on this Mother Earth, that are necessary for us to do the job that we've been given to do. And that is to pray for all people and all things. And that is to pray for the balance and love and harmony to exist in all things and all places and in the hearts and minds of all people throughout the universe, throughout the planet. So that has been our responsibility, and we have been negligent in it. We have allowed ourselves to be pushed aside. We have allowed ourselves to be convinced that we are powerless, and we have allowed ourselves to be convinced that what we had, what we were given, was not in equity or parity with anything else, and that we must find a way to change our way of thinking, change our way of life, in order to adapt to the systems which surround us. Those are what people call ideas. The ideas that one civilization is superior to another because it had better ideas. Well, it's amazing, because what Chuck was talking about in the collapse of the economy is that in next year will be the 52nd anniversary of the dropping of the bomb on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And if you remember, he's talking about a multiple number, a numerator of 52, remarked a very significant place in talking about the end of a civilization or the downfall of a civilization. And it's very synchronistic that Japan happens to be that nation that nine of its largest banks control that much of our economy and hold it in bay, holding us at bay, so to speak. And so it'll be interesting to see what happens on the 52nd anniversary of that whole episode, the dropping of the bomb. That may be just the time that they indeed do pull out that corner card, and our economy then will make a significant switch and change. So migration is one of those things that we are about. Our spirit goes from body to body. We reincarnate. We go from place to place. We go from lifetime to lifetime, country to country, planet to planet, continent to continent. And if we were here, we came here. And that's one of the things about indigenous. You know, all of you are indigenous. You're all been everything that there is to be. And you're back here. You're here. You're not here by accident today either. But you're here. You're here in this place. And so you were brought to this place. You have been in this place. Regardless of who you are now, what your family history has been for the last 500 years, and where your coat of arms comes from, if you live here, and you are here of this place, then you are indigenous to it, and you are some of the original people. You are the people who were here. And it's just your heart and minds that have pulled you here. Your memory has pulled you here. And so you're my relative. I'm your relative. We're related. We're connected. We're all the same tribes. We're all the same bands. There's no difference that separates us, only in our own perspective. And even in the best of tribes, perspectives are those things which separate us from each other and make the young men want to fight and the old men want to love. So, you know. That's how it is. That's how it goes with Churchill. Yeah, that's just how it is. So, yeah, migration. I can take that and talk all day about it. And I can go a different avenue about every 10 minutes with it. And at the end of the day, you still wouldn't know if I'd answer your question. So that's kind of how it is. Elaborating upon it, I couldn't. I couldn't elaborate on what the commander has said.
They'll ask me tomorrow.
Well, that's good. Sell them a tape. Thank you. And it has many more facets than that. It depends upon the interpreter.
I thought it was a mass translocation of souls.
Is that what you thought it was? Well, then that's what it is. What's it? Yeah, well, you are right. And so is the person next to you and the person behind you and the person on the other side of the room. Everyone is right. There is no wrong.
My mess is bigger than your mess.
Yeah, I had more people than you did, right. You see, the whole process is that we start to believe that there is a particular way, there's a particular truth. And all truth is truth. All truth is right. All opinions are, you know, everybody's perspective is right. I can accept that your perspective is what it is. I don't have to agree with it. Therefore, I don't have to live next to you. I don't have to live in the same house with you, marry you, feed you, wash your clothes, or anything like that. But I can exist on the same planet with you, and if you get a flat tire and I pass you on the road, I'll stop and help you. Or if we need to move furniture in this room, I will assist you. Or if we need to do something else of that nature, I can work with you without needing to know your politics or your perspectives about migration. Aho, yes. In the back with the hat.
Bill Crawley, that's true. We're here for a learning experience. This is our schoolroom. What grade is the American Indian in at this point of learning?
Well, let me say this. We're not here to be taught. We're here to remember. That includes you and I. I would like to say that as Native Americans, we are probably, you know, somewhere up in the senior class, someone like that, or with a grad student, or maybe we even might be teaching the class or sharing the knowledge. Right now, we're being pushed in a position to where we have an opportunity again because of the synchronicity of things and the way in which society is going, that we are going to be afforded the opportunity once more to share with you the simplicity of our existence. And the simplicity of our existence is simply that everything is sacred, connected, related, and accountable. And that we have to be able to see that, and that it isn't a matter of social party or structure or material wealth or whatever, but it is an, or nor gender or gender preference, that it is a matter of us realizing our accountability to each other and our connectedness. We hopefully could take claim to that, but so many of us have converted and have been assimilated into the process of thinking like a dominant process that we've forgotten our own mindset. And in that forgetting of our mindset, we then think and put forth energy in such a way that it is not as balanced as it possibly or maybe should be. So we're faced with that dilemma. We need to pay attention to our own house. We need to create and to clean up our own houses. And then we need to, by example, act, think, and, emit that kind of energy that we've been talking about, that we've been touting. And I'm not talking about the fly-by-night hothouse medicine man variety or the shamans or all that stuff. I'm talking about human beings who can exist without blowing whistles and waving flags and saying so. By my example, if you watch me long enough, you're going to see that I, like you, am a human being, and that I have all the hang-ups, and I have all the shortfalls, and I have all the things that you might have, only I express them in a different way. We are here to afford an opportunity, again, to fulfill a certain kind of a destiny, and that destiny has been to show by example that if you follow the faith in which you believe, and that faith is what you live your life with, and it is a life rather than a faith, it becomes a way of life, then that will serve as an example. We're moving into a time now where the ideas of what we call the greatest society or the greatest civilization have taken us over the edge. We all live with cancer in our bodies. We all live with radiation in our bodies. We're dying with every breath we take. The air is polluted. Everything is toxic and contaminated, and so we're dying. And that's part of the birthing that was talked about in Matthew and in Daniel, in your own biblical translations of prophecies in the Bible. You're saying that the pain of birthing, and that's what we're doing, going into a new time. It isn't coming. It is here, and it's operational, and we're in it. It's not something that's going to happen next week. It's here. It's been happening since 1987, as Casey said, since 58. It's been going on. So we're in that process. And we, like every other nation of people, are struggling with the same kinds of problems. It isn't that Indians en masse are wonderful and loving and spiritual and knowledgeable. It's that there are a few who are wonderful and loving and spiritual and knowledgeable, and the rest of them are like everybody else, confused and frustrated and angry and flailing around, you know, in the atmosphere trying to find stability. And so we have to break that romanticized idea and get into the reality of it, that all of us then have to be able to present this message, not just indigenous people, because you're all accountable to our own condition. Each one of you have contributed to the conditions of the world today, and you have to be accountable for it and start to live our lives in such a way that it isn't left up to one people. It's not left up to the black race or the red race or the yellow race or the white race. It's left up to the human race to be accountable for the conditions and to make the changes which are necessary in the world today, in the planet today, in the universe today. There's no special group. We're just saying these things because we remembered it longer and sooner that we've tried to live ourselves in this way, and we've not been able to do it. If it's such a damn good way, we should have been able to be at the apex of our existence, rather at the cellar, and shit rolls downhill. You know, we're the poorest people in the world in some instances, and now we're becoming the richest people in the world because we finally have said there is a way here in which to make the money. There is a way here in which to become independent and to become self-sustaining and to recapture our dignity. But even above all of that, I'm saying to them, before you do any of that and think that as the salver, the savior of the salvation, you have got to recapture your spirituality, which means you've got to be who you are. Each and every one of us has to be who we are. And it can't be religiosity or party politics or economy or whatever. It has to be that we are human beings. Human beings. And it is our place and our purpose here to serve in the work of the Creator. And that is to love, to share, to have bravery, to have fortitude, establish community, to work and be accountable for our process here. And you know what our process here is? It's breathing. We're here to breathe like the trees and the rocks. We're here to act as filters for the air. We breathe the air in, and you store the toxicity in your body. That's why your body ages. That's why things grow in your body. That's why your body gets sick. Your mind doesn't get sick. Your body gets sick. And it's because we're storehousing and warehousing all the toxicity in the air. And we try to eliminate it by the natural cycle, and that works sometimes, but for the most part, we have not been able to find a way to eliminate the toxicity and the pollutants in our body that we take in. And it is the same problem we are faced with when we're talking about nuclear fuel rods, nuclear waste, toxic waste. We cannot find any place to put it or any way to eliminate it. And so it has overwhelmed us, and it is taking its toll. Because it must coexist also, and it has a right to coexist. And we are the ones who have created it. All of us, by allowing it to happen, wanting better ways of electricity, better ways to have power, better ways to have a comfortable home, better, bigger cars to drive, faster automobiles, faster computers. We have technologically put ourselves out of existence, and the machines are running our lives. And we'll do so until we come to the birthing time and this thing shuts down. And you won't hit that switch and nothing will come on. You won't pick up the phone. There'll be no way to talk. You have to learn smoke signal. We'll be back to that. You see, we'll be back to that. But that our purpose is not to lead us out of it, but is to share with you that we are all equally sacred. We are all equally wise. We are all equally spiritual. We are all equally accountable for what it is we have seen and watched and contributed to. And we must find a way for us to come to that sense of thinking. Chuck talked about the blue star. The blue star Kachina. We talk about also in the Lakota the red and blue days where things turn. The moon becomes red and the sun becomes blue. What that is, you know what that is? Simplicity. You know what it is? It's a reduction of our ego. It's a reduction of our egotism. Our ego needs to reduce itself and our humility needs to increase. And we talk about the red and blue time simply as a metaphor for breathing. Each breath I take, in between I die. Each new breath gives me new life, a new beginning in the hoop, in the circle. With each breath I exhale, I reduce my ego through the experience of death, and for each new breath I take, I increase my humility. And what's it all about? Compassion. We wish God to have compassion. We wish the host of heavens to be compassionate. And what do we know about compassion? Compassion is realizing through experience, through lifetime after lifetime after lifetime, that we can not understand, but that we can accept the problems that another human being is going through. If we were to understand anything, we would have created parity and equality for women 1,000 years ago. So obviously we don't understand that. You see, what we try to do now is to say then let's have...